The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the FT's US Election Countdown podcast. I'm Dimitri Sevastopoulos.
And I'm Courtney Weaver. We're coming to you this week from the FT's Bureau in Washington, D.C. So, diving right in, if this week were a 2000 Richard Gere movie, it would have to be called Donald T. and the Women. Let's go straight to Trump's interview with Megyn Kelly on Tuesday night. There was a great line in the Washington Post this morning comparing the interview's fluff to, quote, a nutrition-free marshmallow. Do you think that was an accurate description?
I think that's probably unfair to marshmallows. I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, think back in August last year, the first Republican debate, 17 contenders on the stage. And Megyn Kelly stole the show. I mean, she had this amazing question where she put Trump on the spot and she said, "You're a man who's described women as fat pigs, as dogs. Do you have the temperament to be president?" And, you know, Trump was stunned, and it set off this months-long feud where, you know, at one point he refused to take part in another debate because she was going to be one of the moderators. And we've gone from there to last night, where you've got to say it was one of the softest interviews you've seen during the whole campaign trail. And Megyn Kelly, who developed this reputation for being this really tough questioner of Donald Trump, you know, came out looking like Barbara Walters, who does kind of hagiographies of celebrities. I mean, so talk about a turnaround.
Right. I think that's actually unfair to Barbara Walters. I mean, I think that the reason this year has been so interesting, it really seemed like a transformation for Megyn Kelly. Here she was, you know, with Fox News for so many years, which is seen as this conservative outlet. And this, her feud with Donald Trump was seen as this launching pad for her to have her a new career and maybe to switch to a bigger network station. And then last night just ended up seeming like a promotion for her book or something, which was quite surprising. I think even more so because this whole feud with Trump has become such a big part of the narrative of Trump being unfair to women and Trump being sexist. You remember after the debate last summer, Trump came out and said about Megyn Kelly that she had blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her whatever. And this has become such a big part of the narrative that Trump is not a friend to women.
Yeah, no, exactly. And as you said, it's gone on and on and on. And I mean, the other interesting thing is that, you know, Fox News generally is considered to be a very conservative station. In previous elections, it's seen as being more favorable to the Republican candidate. In this election, that hasn't been the case so far, at least not in terms of Donald Trump. And, you know, Rupert Murdoch, you know, months ago was tweeting pretty strong things that were not favorable to Trump. And there are stories out there at the moment which said that, you know, Murdoch was one of the people who told Kelly to go tough on Trump back in August last year. And that maybe now Fox is looking at these amazing ratings that Trump is generating, and the station has decided to be a little bit friendlier to the tycoon, and everyone will benefit on their side of the fence. What did you think of the New York Times article, which I think has been their best read article of the year, which is looking at his relationship and his history with women?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. So just to sum up for people who haven't seen the article, it includes 50 plus interviews with women who've had either personal dealings or business dealings with Trump. And I think it was enlightening in a lot of ways. There's been some criticism of the article, not just from Trump, who at one point this week suggested through his lawyers that he might try to sue the New York Times, but now appears to be walking back from that suggestion. But from people who, you know, thought, you know, here is this candidate who has this reputation for being one of the most overtly sexist candidates in modern political history in the U.S. And it was a lot more everyday sexism and misogyny and no kind of silver bullet. But I thought it was very telling about his relationship with women at work. You know, there was a lot of quotes from a woman who he promoted to be basically the head of his construction business in the 70s. You know, something that was unheard of at the time. And then just his day-to-day interaction with women and kind of offhand comments that come off pretty sexist, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I mean, he's got this kind of almost bifurcated personality where, you know, some women in his life seem to be promoted and kind of given positions of responsibility. And then on other occasions, he treats women, and the New York Times used the word degrading. I mean, the kind of main character in the New York Times piece was this former model who met him at a pool party in Florida. and he took her on a tour of the his estate, and then he asked her if she wanted to change into a bikini. And then when she did, and when they went outside to the pool, he kind of showed her off as a Trump girl. Now, she herself said she didn't find that demeaning, but you know, I think a lot of people think that that's probably not the kind of personality or character trait that you want in your president. Although, frankly, a lot of the Trump supporters will say, well, Bill Clinton didn't exactly hold the office in high esteem in that respect, too. So there's an element of double standards going on here. But then we have the Clinton Super PAC, which is one of these outside groups supporting Hillary Clinton that has started running attacks on Trump. And it's pretty clear that they're jumping on the bandwagon now, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's already clear, you know, the general election is still months away, but I think it's already clear that this theme of women and Donald Trump's role with women and Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton's relationship with women is going to be one of the overarching themes of the campaign. So in this new ad, which Priorities USA, which is the main Clinton super PAC, has just released, shows, you know, various different women in different T-shirts with Donald Trump's face on it. And basically what they're doing is they're standing there and they're mouthing the words of all these offensive statements Trump has said about women in the past.
Does she have a good body? No. Does she have a fat ass? Absolutely. You like girls that are 5'1", they come up to you nowhere.
If Ivanka weren't my daughter, perhaps I'd be dating her.
So it's a bit of a preview of what we're going to see in the general election, I think.
One of the curious things for me this week was, you know, Trump went on a pretty strong response to the New York Times story. I mean, he tweeted a lot of angry things and he took the reporters to task. And, you know, he drew a lot more attention to the piece than otherwise it would have got. So he clearly somehow it's gotten under his skin. But then on the other hand, when the Super PAC put out this ad, one of the lines in there was one of the women saying in Trump's voice, you know, you can tell them to go blank themselves. Then Trump put out a tweet that said, the pathetic new hit ad against me represents the final line. You can tell them to go blank themselves was about China, not women. And you kind of think to yourself, okay, well, that's slightly missing the point. But it's pretty clear we're going to be in for a roller coaster ride in terms of a Trump v. Clinton for the rest of the year.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess, so one of the other big Trump stories this week was the announcement that Trump and the Republican National Committee had come to an agreement about two joint fundraising committees, the Trump Make America Great Again Committee and the Trump Victory Committee. Is this a reverse on Trump saying that he was going to self-fund in the election?
I think yes and no. I mean, the thing is, Trump has said all along he was self-funding. And as you and I both know from talking to voters at rallies, that's a big selling point with the electorate or his supporters. But the truth is that he was already raising money from people, but from individuals, either on his website or from selling his Make America Great Again merchandise, the hats and the T-shirts and et cetera. But this is a big change in direction because he's now teaming up with the Republican Party, who he has hit heavily during the campaign. They've criticized him heavily. But I think both groups have realized that if they're going to have any chance of taking the White House in November, that they need each other. It's a kind of it's a symbiotic relationship now, and they need money. Hillary Clinton is going to raise a fortune. And, you know, Trump is not going to liquidate all of his assets to take on Hillary Clinton. He's going to need money, and selling hats is not going to do it.
Do you think that this is a sign that people like Paul Ryan are also going to come behind Trump?
Hard to know with Paul Ryan because he took such a stand early on saying that it was, you know, against Trump that it may take a while for him to come around. But I think a lot of the party at this point will come around Trump because as much as they don't like Trump, they dislike Hillary Clinton even more. And so that's the kind of the choice they have to make. Which of the lesser of two evils do you want to support in November? But certainly, I think we took a step in that direction with this fundraising agreement.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see how Trump's supporters react to this. Just talking to voters, it seems like, you know, one of the chief things they say about why they like Donald Trump is the fact that he's not taking money from big corporate groups. But at the same time, when you ask them, you know, a follow-up question, you say, well, what if Trump does start taking super PAC money in the general election and stop self-funding? Most of them seem to think that's perfectly fine.
Yeah, and I have the same impression. And also, I mean, if anything, he's a master of selling things. And one person said to me last week, you know, he can sell anything. He can sell anything that doesn't exist. And so even when he's slightly finessing things and explaining things that don't quite make sense, if you look at the details, you know, I think a lot of people will gloss over that. And that's one of the reasons why he's been a kind of a Teflon candidate.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one thing before we wrap up, I wanted to ask you about. So, you know, Bernie Sanders won Oregon on Tuesday. Hillary Clinton looks like she eked out a very thin victory in Kentucky. Is Bernie Sanders under a lot of pressure to quit now? Have we seen anything change over the past week?
Well, I think just one thing to point out is that Oregon was a closed primary. So basically every other closed primary that we've seen, Hillary has won because it favors registered Democratic voters. And we know that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are either independents or they're new voters because a lot of them are younger. So I think it's important to emphasize what a big victory in Oregon it is, and also how close the Kentucky race was. I mean, he lost by half a percentage point there. At the same time, yes, we're definitely seeing a lot of pressure from the DNC establishment and from other Democratic leaders for Bernie Sanders to get out of the race. They argue that Hillary fighting this primary against Bernie Sanders is detracting from her attention on the race with Donald Trump in November, and that here Donald Trump is, you know, has this time to focus on how he's going to attack Hillary and what his main strategy is going to be. And Hillary doesn't have that option right now. I mean, but the other thing is that, you know, Bernie Sanders is his own person. He's going to exit the race when he wants to. He's not gunning for a cabinet post in the Clinton administration. He's more a loyalist. He's an independent, not a lifetime member of the Democratic Party. So I think he will probably stay in until the very end, like we've been predicting. But you're definitely going to see a lot more criticism of him as it gets closer to June.
Yeah, I agree. He's been making the same argument for 20 years, so I don't see why he's going to stop now. But one kind of image to leave people with, we talked about Kentucky being really close. Well, one of the best lines came from Paul Begala, who is a senior figure in the PAC supporting Hillary Clinton. He said that the result in Kentucky was like a Speedo on Chris Christie.
An image that will haunt your dreams.
It might do. So listen, that is it for this week. Thank you everyone for listening. You can find us on Twitter, and I'm at Dimi Sevastopulo. That is DimiSevastopulo. And Courtney is at Courtney_FT. That's CourtneyFT.
And you can also sign up for our daily campaign trail newsletter, White House Countdown, at FT.com/NBE. That stands for News by Email. Again, FT.com/NBE.
And be sure to download FT Politics wherever you get your podcasts, including iTunes, Stitcher, and Acast. This podcast was produced and edited by Amy King.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is out now, and it's all about AI and creativity. I speak to Doug Eck, Senior Research Director at Google DeepMind.
Creativity is part and parcel of humanity.
YouTube creator Danny Vidari.
AI can give us humans new ideas.
And Neil Maiden, Professor of Digital Creativity at City University London.
AI creates a lot of opportunities. I think it's a great leveler.
Listen to the full episode of The Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts. Enjoy.
The latest episode of the Next 5 podcast is all about health prevention and vaccines. I speak to Kate Hashey at GSK.
For every dollar invested in improving health, there's an economic return of $2 to $4.
Murray Aitken at IQVIA Institute for Human Data Science.
The benefits of adult vaccination are compelling.
And David Sinclair at the International Longevity Centre.
Preventable conditions amongst those aged 50 to 64 in the UK cost $27 billion a year.
Listen to the full episode of the Next 5 wherever you get your podcasts.